Our next presenter is going to be Dr. Greg D. Kimball, whose paper has the intriguing title, The Music of the Tubies, Royal Hawaiian Orchestra, and American Factory Band. Dr. Kimball is Director of Public Services and Outreach at the Library of Virginia. He received his PhD in American History from the University of Virginia and his MLS from the University of Maryland, College Park. Greg is the author of the book American City, Southern Place, A Cultural History of Antebellum Richmond, and numerous articles and essays. Greg was an exhibition curator and historian at Richmond's Valentine Richmond History Center for almost 10 years. In 2002, he organized the Virginia Roots Music Project at the Library of Virginia, an exhibition and program series highlighting the state's musical traditions, and he contributed to the CD set Virginia Roots, the 1929 Richmond Sessions. Greg has lectured extensively on musical traditions, developing themed multimedia performances on American labor, blues, gospel, and country music. He is a veteran of the U.S. Army, and he is also an avid collector of American traditional music on 78 RPM discs and cylinders. Greg.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. So this is my first ARS conference, and it's so relaxed I decided I would just go Hawaiian here, since it's a good theme, right, for the talk. Actually, I was with Phil Wiggins when I was wearing this once, and he said that he would almost want to fight me for this shirt. It's got to be a good Hawaiian shirt for that to happen. So how did I get into this project? Well, as you just heard, I worked on an exhibition called Virginia Roots Music back in 2003, and we really were focusing particularly on the period of the 20s and 30s, when, of course, you start to have some really good recording of that. And also, this is actually the section on the Tubies Royal Hawaiian Orchestra that we had in the exhibition. You can see, and I'll talk a little bit more about, that beautiful national steel guitar that's in the case there. And at the same time, I was working with my good friend Ron Curry, who I want to give a big shout out to, because he really worked on a lot of this research with me. And he was working at the same time on a CD reissue of all of the sides that were recorded at the only recording session in this period in Richmond, Virginia in 1929 by the OK Company. So those are the two things that sort of came together to really make me start to think about, well, who, you know, there were two sides that we were going to reissue of this group called the Tubies Royal Hawaiian Orchestra. And at that time, neither Ron or I had any idea who these people were, whether they even were Virginians, or what the word Tubies meant. That was answered for me one day when I was in the library's reading room and I met a woman who was a newspaper editor in Hopewell, Virginia, and I just casually mentioned that we were working on this project and the name of the band, and she said, oh, I know what Tubies is. She says it's a rayon plant that existed down in Hopewell, Virginia in the 1920s. Quite large one. And in fact, the name Tubies comes from Belgium. It was a Belgian corporation which had come to the United States to open these rayon plants. Hopewell was a very industrial city. It had previously had a DuPont factory there that was making dynamite and had big war production during World War I. The city sort of sprang up spontaneously. It was called the Wonder City because of that. And eventually, DuPont left, but Tubies came along. And by 1928, this company was employing about 3,500 people and making about 10 million pounds of rayon annually. Quite an operation. You see here the Tubies spinneret. This was the employees' journal that they wrote themselves. And in it, I found all kinds of incredible stuff. And that brings another person that I have to give a big credit to, Jeannie Langford, the librarian at Appomattox Regional Library. Hopewell is at the confluence of the James and Appomattox Rivers. And she just knows everybody in Hopewell. And she started to point me to all kinds of people, and I started recording family members' interviews and finding out about the band. So who were the Tubies Royal Hawaiian Orchestra? Well, actually, the majority of the members of the band were rural Southerners. The two principal people, the man playing steel guitar who is on the right, is named Albert A. Coley. He and his brother Robert, who is in the center playing guitar, were both from a family farm near Fayzon, North Carolina, and they moved up to Hopewell, like a lot of rural Southerners did, to work in factories, just to make a better living. There were also quite a few other rural Virginians, such as Claudius Eugene Gene Mail, who was a chauffeur for the company, who had come from Etowicoke, Virginia, to Hopewell. And then there was one gentleman who was not a Virginian or even an American, who was a key figure in the band. He's standing in the center in the back, and that is Walter Titterington, who was actually from Lancashire, England. And he had come over, he had served in World War I. He had been a member of the White Star Minstrels on the White Star line, a very good singer, tenor singer, so he became the principal singer of the band. And his wife actually worked at Tabee's, but he did not. He was a house painter. So this follows a fairly familiar pattern. You know, a lot of companies at this time, of course, had factory bands, and the Tabee's group was not unique. There was the Tabee's band, just Tabee's band, which was a brass band. There was Gray's Wonder City Syncopators. There was a black quartet. So this factory had all, and they had baseball leagues and all the things that factory company towns had at that time. Well, let's hear a little bit of probably the most well-known Tabee's side, which is Wabash Blues. This was released on our Hooley's Hawaiian Steel Guitar Classics. So a little taste of one of their instrumental numbers, the Wabash Blues, which was, I'll actually show you a slide that should give you the information on various recordings they made. Compare these next two this image with the next one, particularly Mr. Coley, and see if you can tell the difference. So what's he playing here? It's a Style 4 National. This is a guitar that just got invented a couple years before out in Los Angeles, and he's already got one of these and playing it on his later session in the fall of 1929 in Richmond. Well, how could Mr. Coley, a factory worker, afford such an instrument? It is absolutely beautiful. A relative actually owns the guitar, and we had it for the exhibit. Well, the company bought it, and he paid them back on time. So a very classic kind of an approach. I guess that's one way to think of the company store, you know? Food, National Steel Guitar. Those are his receipts, where they were taking the money out of his pay. Real quickly, I want to do a little diversion here and talk a little bit about the fact that obviously Hawaiian music we're talking about is not, we talk about traditional music. Well, Hawaiian music had already gone through a series of transformations from the 19th century on with European contact, obviously. So you went from, obviously, a chanting of meles, as they were called, and the use of drums, like the ipu, to the introduction of the guitar, and eventually the development of the Hawaiian slide guitar and another defining Hawaiian instrument, the ukulele, based to some degree on a Portuguese instrument that had been imported to the islands. And of course, Joseph Kakuku is most famously known as the sort of originator of the slide style on guitar. And as Tim Brooks has written about, this music just blew up. in America after annexation, and annexation is a big, big part of this. And annexation is a nice way to say we basically took away the Hawaiian Islands and deposed Queen Liliuokalani, right? So at any rate, after this happens, we have groups from Hawaii who are coming to the mainland, Ford's Hawaiians, so-called, who appear at the Panama Pacific Exposition. Most of the major expositions had Hawaiian groups at them. There's a very famous Broadway play, which is sounds really terrible, actually, called Bird of Paradise, that also is hugely popularizes Hawaiian music in America. And this is one of the songs from that. And in fact, the group that performed on stage went on and then recorded for Victor. This is, you've probably have all seen this sleeve before. It's a classic Hawaiian sleeve. The quaint and fascinating Hawaiian music. There's obviously a huge amount of exoticism that's going on in this whole thing. So how about more closer to home to Hopewell? Well, Richmond is a fairly close city, and we know Mr. Coley and his band were on radio in Richmond. And on the right, you see, that's an ad, 1920 ad for a Hawaiian school of music in Richmond. And this is a guitar instructional published by a guy, this is in Mr. Coley's papers, which was published in 1920 in Richmond, Virginia. So this gets us to sources from Mr. Coley and the band's music. I don't think he actually did have this record set, but this is an ad for an actual record set, instructional set, that was published. There are a lot of ways people were crazy about Hawaiian steel guitar. Another indication of popularity, this is just one of many lists of multiple Hawaiian bands playing on WRVA, 1925, 50,000-watt station in Richmond, Virginia, where the Tabiz Hawaiians would become regulars. Frank Ferreira is in this list of artists who appear on the Maxwell, what is it called, House Hour over stations. But of course, most stations weren't using, there were very few national broadcasts in this early period. It was almost all local artists. And one of the best things in Mr. Coley's papers were these set lists from the radio shows that actually said what tunes were being played. This is one of those. The station was owned by the Loris Brothers Tobacco Company, which is where what the logo is there. And it's really classic, you know, of course, Hawaiian repertoire. You have hulas, waltzes, marches, hapa haole or half white term that's used in Hawaii. Tune, basic pop tunes that are written that are sort of pseudo Hawaiian. They also did country songs, you know, Treasures Untold, things like that. Here's another one of those set lists. This is from August of 29, in between their two recording station, and actually has several of the original pieces that they recorded when they recorded for OK. And this is a wonderful little thank you piece they would send back to people who wrote the telegrams, and this collection's full of telegrams to them, asking them to play particular pieces, etc. They were, like many of these artists, they were discovered through a furniture dealer in Hopewell, who then went to the local James K. Polk distributor in Richmond and said, hey, you should record these guys. You know, very similar to what happened with a lot of bands at that period. So here's a list of their recorded songs and the issues, as far as I know them. You'll see one of the more interesting things is down at the bottom, listen to the Mockingbird. The only release of that was in Japan. It was never issued domestically. And as you can see, these records were issued in Europe, Australia, Japan. So very bizarre, right? They learn this music from a culture thousands of miles away, and then they send their music back the other direction. This is what American Odeon issue. Now let's get into the sources in the collection, and we'll talk about some specific musical examples. So one of the things is there, Mr. Coley actually had in his collection a guitar tablature that he had written out. So here's Kalima Waltz, who he had to have King's Hawaiian Melodies. This is like the classic work by Charles King. Many guitar methods. This is a wonderful guitar book by Paul Summers, who recorded for OK in Honolulu in 1928 with his Waikiki players, did Hula Blues, and he corresponded with him. In fact, he wrote him a letter asking him permission to use his guitar arrangements on his radio show on WRVA. So we know then, right, that one of the sources was indeed tablature sheet music. And one good example I can show you of that is Lambert's book from Richmond. Here's Mr. Coley's written out tablature side by side with the book. It's exact. He's using exactly the same arrangement, guitar arrangement, from the book, from the tablature. I'll give you another example, though, where he used a record, I think, clearly as his source. So why marches, right? Well, it's because of the Royal Hawaiian Band, led by this Germanic guy, Henry Berger, who comes over and founds this Hawaiian band. He's very sensitive to Hawaiian music, actually, and records a lot of it. I mean, he was really an ethnographic person, ethnographer as much as he was a leader of the Royal Hawaiian Band. But he wrote a number of marches that were based on Hawaiian tunes, very popular ones that you would know. So let's listen to, this is actually Pale Kelua's Honolulu March on Victor from 1914, and I tried this out on my tricone, and this transcription, even the opening, is pretty much exactly the same. So I'm confident that he learned this piece from this recording. Part of the reason I can say that is, here's a transcription of the same song from one of his songbooks that is nothing like what you just heard. So I think it is a pretty good case to be made here that he's using every resource he can, whether it's sheet music, whether it's a recorded song, to create a repertoire in this Hawaiian style. Now, one question might be, well, do we know that these tablature transcriptions actually are accurate to what he actually performed? I can say pretty definitively yes, because if we listen to Whispering Hope, which is one of the issued sides from the sessions for OK, and compare it to this tablature that he had in his collection, fits up very nicely. Here's Whispering Hope. let that run through the vocal part, because that's what I want to finish up with, is talking about, well, where does the vocal come from? And one of the great things about this collection, too, is that there are 78s in it. So again, we can kind of think, okay, what among these 78s influenced Mr. Coley and the rest of the band? And I want to use those to really talk about the vocal approach that they're using. Here's a couple, just a sampling of some of the 78s that were in his collection. And I'm going to talk a little bit first about that last one, the Four Aristocrats. This is something that I was completely unaware of, this band, until I found this, saw this material. And I'll just go ahead. And one of the tunes that's on this disc was a perennial on their set list. And it was Don't Sing Aloha When I Go. So listen first to the Four Aristocrats version of that song.
As his ship slowly sailed away. Don't sing aloha when I go, because I'm coming back, you know. Don't sing aloha, so I cry. A parting does not mean goodbye.
I think the connection's obvious, right? These vocal refrains, they love to do this. And it seemed to be a very standard part of the music of the time, and something I think that probably attracted the Tabiz group to certain artists. Another group that I want to play you, this is certainly a little bit more traditional, I guess you'd say, to also make this point, is Kalama's Quartet. You may have seen on the earlier this list right here, there's the Four Aristocrats, Victor, that we were just talking about. Kalama's Quartet was a very, very successful recording quartet. Bill Kalama was the leader of the band, but the real star of Kalama's Quartet, although they had a wonderful, collective sound, was Mike Hanapi, who is one of the steel guitar players. One of the other things that was really unique about them in some ways is they often used two steel guitars. But Hanapi was a wonderful steel player, but also an excellent falsetto Hawaiian singer, which sometimes is referred to as yodeling on the labels. And, it does have a kind of a connection. You can hear somewhat of a similarity, and an American would interpret it kind of as yodeling. But that falsetto jump, and unlike in a lot of Western music where you mask the jump from your regular voice into your falsetto voice, you actually accentuate that jump as you go into it. So let's hear a little of it's actually the flip of the label you see there, Sweet Lei Lehua by the Kalama's Quartet. Again, you have this very rich vocal refrain with really beautiful, you know, harmonic things going on in it. So let's finish up by comparing that to one of the original songs that the Tibbies Royal Hawaiians wrote. I think they wrote four of the tunes of the eight that they recorded in the two sessions. They actually wrote themselves. And this is called Sweetheart of Mandalay, and this is a little lyric sheet that was in Mr. Coley's papers. So let's finish up with that. It's clear to me that connection from, you know, that he had these Kalamas records and this sensibility of the vocal refrain. Another thing you might listen to think about that is some of the records of, say, the Kamehameha Glee Club, where you have Hawaiian instrumentation with these giant choruses. Now, these are usually strophic songs. They're just repeat. They don't really have true choruses, but they have this similar effect of using these large, you know, rich harmonic approaches to the vocals along with the steel guitar and the ukulele and the other instrumentation. One might also speculate that Mr. Titterington's experience singing with the White Star Minstrels might certainly have been an influence on them wanting to sing, use fairly, you know, sophisticated harmonies in their songs. And they also owned a number of white male quartet hillbilly records, which is also probably another influence there. At any rate, that's just a quick look through the repertoire of a small town Hawaiian band in the middle of industrial Virginia, and I hope you enjoyed it.
So thank you very much. We actually do have time for one or two questions, if anyone wants to ask a question now about this Hawaiian music. Anyone?
No takers.
All right. You can always ask questions after the session as well.